How violent are liberal democracies these days? Authorities in the U.S. investigating what's possibly the second assassination attempt against Donald Trump of this general election campaign. We'll be asking about the probe and whether there's a link between violent rhetoric and actual acts of violence. From the assassination of Japan's former leader Shinzo Abe to the recent attempt on the life of Slovakia's Prime Minister Robert Fico, each example is different. But is there something specific about America, the land of gun rights and the pioneer spirit of the Wild West, that makes it unique among Western powers? What impact does this violence have on potential voters? And when they count balance, will the pen be mightier than the sword? Today in the France 24 debate, how violent a campaign in the United States. With us from Washington, France 24 correspondent Fraser Jackson. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
We have two Jacksons out of Washington. Chris Jackson, Senior Vice President at the Polling Institute Ipsos Public Affairs. Welcome to the show.
Greetings. Good to be with you.
From Lucca in Italy, Katie Gaddini, Associate Professor of Sociology at University College London. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
And we're with journalist Craig Capitis, the author of Mona Lisa's Pajamas, among others. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Francois.
Your reactions on the hashtag F24debate. Yeah, just 9 weeks after a bullet grazed his ear at a rally in Pennsylvania, the FBI is stating that former President Donald Trump was the target of what appears to be an assassination attempt at his golf club, in his golf club. More on the suspect with Yinka Oyatade.
Inside this courthouse in West Palm Beach, Florida, the wheels of justice are beginning to turn. It's here that 58-year-old Ryan Ruth was criminally charged Monday, a day after he was arrested over an apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. Federal prosecutors charged the suspect with possession of a firearm as a convicted felon and possession of a firearm with an obliterated serial number. U.S. media report that Ryan Ruth was captured after Secret Service agents opened fire on a gunman carrying an AK-47 rifle near the boundary of Trump's Florida golf course. A staunch political activist, Ruth has voiced opinions both supportive of and critical of Trump. One cause dear to his heart, however, has been the war in Ukraine, as he recently spent months in the country supporting the resistance against the Russian invasion. Here he is talking about Russian President Vladimir Putin in 2022.
Putin is a terrorist, and he needs to be ended. So we need everybody from around the globe to stop what they're doing and come here now and support the Ukrainians to end this war.
Ruth is suspected of being the person who hid in shrubbery with a rifle, scope, and camera near the area where Trump was golfing. Secret Service agents were clearing holes ahead of Trump when they spotted a rifle barrel. The agents opened fire, but the person fled in a black car before being apprehended on the highway. The FBI has said the incident appears to be an assassination attempt. Nonetheless, Trump posted statements in seemingly good spirits that evening, praising law enforcement for their work and saying he would never surrender to people trying to stop him and his supporters. In an interview with Fox News Digital Monday, the Republican nominee said rhetoric from U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris is to blame for the apparent assassination attempt.
And Fraser Jackson, as we hear in that report, this is a story moving on two fronts. On the one hand, the facts of the investigation, and on the other, the politics of it.
Yeah, it's kind of impossible to escape the fact that this is taking place against the backdrop of the wider election. Of course, you're kind of, you know, hesitant to seem insensitive at the in the wake of such a kind of potentially tragic event. But as time moves on, it becomes, you know, more and more easy to look at things with a wider scope. And indeed, this is going to be something which could potentially impact the election. I'm told from sources inside Kamala Harris's campaign that they believe this isn't something that will ultimately affect the course of the race. And they basically are continuing as though it's business as normal, really. They are both going for campaign events, both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Donald Trump on Monday is going to be launching a new cryptocurrency business at Mar-a-Lago, and we are told he will be continuing with that before heading to Flint, Michigan later in the week, and then ultimately he'll be speaking again in public at a conference here in Washington, D.C. Kamala Harris is continuing as well. She has many stops on her battleground tour this week. Ultimately, she'll be talking to Oprah Winfrey on Thursday, which was meant to be some kind of big event that would really, they hoped, sway voters. Oprah, of course, somebody who is massively influential in the United States. And we are told that Kamala Harris's campaign will be continuing and not using this as a political moment. They say it's not a political moment, and really that we can expect more from her in a similar vein to what we heard before, where she condemns the violence and says political violence has no place in America, but ultimately she is continuing with her campaign as planned.
No place in America, and you heard what Donald Trump had to say to Fox Digital.
Yes, Donald Trump did an interview with Fox Digital early on Monday. It's the first time that we've actually properly spoken, heard from him in person, as it were, which wasn't an official campaign email. And I hope we can bring this up for you now. He's also just posted on his Truth Social media platform as well, his social media platform. I'll read you a bit of what it says, just in case we don't have the graphic. It says,
we do, and we can see lots of capital letters.
There's a lot of capital letters, indeed. You know, that is, tends to be on brand for Donald Trump. He says, the rhetoric lies as exemplified by the false statements made by comrade Kamala Harris during the rigged and highly partisan ABC debate and all the ridiculous lawsuits specifically designed to inflict damage on Joe, then Kamala's political opponent, me, has taken politics in our country to a whole new level of hatred, abuse, and distrust. This then is the bit which he really lays it into them, is he says, because of this communist left rhetoric, the bullets are flying and it will only get worse. He then goes on to list a list of grievances against perceived immigrants and migrants to this country. It must be said, though, take note of what he is saying there, and take note of the difference between the aftermath of this assassination attempt on him and the first assassination attempt on him. We were told in the aftermath of that event in Butler, Pennsylvania, that Donald Trump would be striking a tone of national unity to try to tone down the national rhetoric. And indeed, that is what the beginning of his speech was like at the RNC before it then went wayward. That is a completely different situation to how the Trump campaign and Trump himself is now dealing with this attempted assassination. They are definitely laying the blame for this at the feet of the Democrats and at the feet of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden in particular. So it is worth striking the difference of tone between these two events.
Chris Jackson, it was 9 weeks ago. It was on the eve of the Republican convention that a bullet grazed Donald Trump's ear. A lot's happened since. It almost had seemed until Sunday like an afterthought, what happened in Pennsylvania. Now, two events like this, is this going to have an impact?
It seems like a long time since that's happened, yes. It was a vastly different race at the time. But I do think it's worth remembering that that first attempt and the Republican convention that happened immediately afterwards did result in Trump getting a bump in his personal favorability rating, a bump that hasn't really subsided yet. So he has still enjoyed some advantages from that. Now, this event doesn't have anything like the same visuals, the same impactful moment of Trump holding his fist up in defiance, seeming defiance. So I don't think this will have an impact, but the first one certainly did.
Katie Gaudini, what were your thoughts when you heard about this? And again, so far, the suspect has not formally yet been charged with an assassination attempt, although now they have mobile phone records showing it seems as though he'd been casing the joint, if you will, being some 11 hours around the golf course.
I have to say, I wasn't surprised when I heard this. The temperature on this election has been turned up. We're getting closer to the actual election day. I've been doing research with Trump supporters since 2015, and a lot of them are very angry. And this will only embolden Trump's base. It will strengthen this idea that they are under attack. Their candidate is under attack. They are under attack. And they will do anything possible to get him back in power and stop this perceived attack. So I think what we're seeing, unfortunately, is not surprising, and we may see more violence leading up to this election and after.
More violence, Craig Kapitas?
Yeah, I think Katie hit the proverbial nail on the head. I think our other guests are have forgotten, understandably, that Trump's campaign is based on the World Wrestling Entertainment, Vince McMahon's operation. These are staged events. In wrestling, they're called kayfabe. Trump is a good friend of Vince McMahon.
Well, come on, it wasn't staged when a bullet grazed his ear.
It's how he played it. It's how he played it. It's called cheap heat in wrestling. What you do, you take an issue that has nothing to do with the campaign or the fight at hand, and you intensify it to, as Katie said, get his supporters all hopped up. Look, the game was given away yesterday when Vance said on CNN, if I have to create stories, kayfabe, that's creating stories, so that the American media actually pays attention, then that's what I'm going
Craig
to do.
Us. We're talking here about it's an attempted assassination.
Yeah, you're missing the forest from the trees, Francois. It's how they play the attempted assassination. How you bring cheap.
Okay, so let me ask you about
how you bring
this.
Cheap heat to this. And I think that's what Kate was getting at there, if I believe.
So, Chris Jackson, you heard two stark reactions, that of Trump saying that this is Biden and Harris's fault, and the Kamala Harris campaign saying, you know, we're not going to use this as fodder on the campaign trail, this story, is the, to take Craig's analogy here a little ways, treating this like it is infotainment, will that get Trump points?
America very much is in a little bit of a post-truth environment where the facts of anything matter less than the spin afterwards. But I think you're seeing really the two different philosophies of how to win the election. Donald Trump is trying to get his base mobilized, riled up, ready to go, and get out there and support him and vote for him, whereas Harris is continuing to try to have a broader tent, bring in more people who may be sort of still giving at least lip service to this idea of a lower national temperature. So it is these two different theories of how you're going to win the election. And I think we're going to have to wait until November to see which
research
one is
on which is the winning strategy, to try to find the common ground or to rile up your base. Chris Jackson?
Oh, sorry. Yes. The research suggests that, honestly, both are necessary. Most Americans have already made up their mind on Donald Trump. Most have already made up their mind on Harris. A big part of it is going to be mobilization. But there are still a handful of swing voters who may make the difference in these very closely divided states.
All right, so it could still be up in the air. Katie Gaudini, is it a winning strategy? I'll put the question to you as well. For Donald Trump to fire up his base, is that enough?
You have to understand that a lot of lifelong Republicans and a lot of conservatives don't necessarily like Trump, but they too feel cheated in the last election, and they too feel under attack by what they perceive are liberal elites. And so events like the assassination attempt, the way that it's spun, the story that's told about it, will be able to pull in some of those undecided voters that don't like Trump as a personality, but do also resonate on an emotional level with that feeling of being attacked and that feeling of being cheated.
The feeling of being attacked, the feeling of being cheated. Let's talk, before we go back into the politics side of it, about the investigation and who this suspect is. Is it even an assassination attempt at this point? France 24 correspondent Catherine Norris Trent is reporting for us from Ukraine's capital. She asked interested parties if they recall Ryan Wesley Ruth when he was there in 2022. Turns out they do, and not in a flattering light.
We know from his social media accounts and pictures that have emerged of him that he was extremely passionate about the Ukrainian cause. He traveled to Ukraine. He was pictured in front of a display of international flags that actually was standing here in Maidan, the Independence Square, a few years back. And he posted this on social media. Now, he seems to have made a lot of claims about wanting to help volunteers come to Ukraine and join in the fight after the Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. But actually, from people I've been speaking to here, a lot of doubt is being cast on the claims of Ryan Routh. In fact, the International Legion, which is composed of international members, people who've come from abroad to join up, said that he has never served for them. And I'm also going to quote you from a member of the ground operations team here in Ukraine, who was the officer of the Foreigners Coordination Department, said that occasionally he contacted them with some ideas to try and collaborate. But no cooperation took place because, I'm quoting this official, his plans and ideas are best described as delusional. I've been in contact also with other people in the armed forces, some of them who've been serving for a couple of years now, some of them international volunteers themselves. And again, I'm going to quote to you from a message that I received from one of them, who said all he did was run around presenting laughable schemes to the public in order to live out his sick fantasies during war. So there's not a lot of credibility given to his claims from people I've spoken to so far in Ukraine. I have tried to contact the International Volunteer Center, which some articles claim he was involved in establishing. So far, I've had no response from them. But clearly, the Ukrainian cause was something that Ryan Routh liked to try and champion. The reality, though, may have been somewhat different.
Fraser Jackson, we saw after the Pennsylvania attempt on Donald Trump's life, a lot of talk, profiling of a suspect who there was this young man who'd been bullied as a teenager, a bit of an outsider. Here, we're getting a different suspect. This one's 58 years old, and we're also beginning to have some idea of who that suspect is.
Yeah, and he doesn't exactly fit the exact profile of that kind of lone wolf person that, you know, it was, you know, the stereotypes that they live in their mother's basements and all those kind of stereotypes that come along with it. But this man has been known to law enforcement. He has a history of arrest going back to 2002 in North Carolina, where he fled from police and barricaded himself inside a building for multiple hours before ultimately being charged with possession of a weapon and possession of a weapon of mass destruction. He had a high rate of fire machine gun with him during that traffic stop, and he has had various run-ins with the law since then as well. So he's not exactly, you know, somebody who you would probably say is completely non-violent, although that is also standing at odds with what his son said to CNN late on Sunday evening. His son said that he knew his father as a loving and caring father, an honest, hardworking man. He said, "I don't know what's happened in Florida. Of course, that's probably changed by now. But he said, I hope things have just been blown out of proportion because from the list I've heard, it doesn't sound like the man I would know to do anything crazy, much less violent." But it is standing at odds, that statement, with statements that we've heard from other people who worked with him during his time in North Carolina, and indeed what our team on the ground in Ukraine is finding out from people there as well. So it's a bit of a difficult picture to paint for this man, because we know that really since these arrests, he's taken to posting a lot more things online, and his online persona and his online presence, it paints a much more different story, and somebody who's much more politically active and somewhat, you know, disturbed, you would say, because the amount of times they're posting and the amount of times he tagged people like Donald Trump and Joe Biden in his posts is not what I think you would call normal behavior. He posted once in 2020 saying that he had previously voted for Donald Trump in 2016. And that tweet, which his Twitter account has now been suspended by X because it said it violated their terms of service. But the tweet said, this is talking to Donald Trump here, "While you were my choice in 2016, I and the world hoped that President Trump would be different and better than the candidate. But we were all greatly disappointed, and it seems you are getting worse and devolving. I will be glad when you're gone." Now, Now, that last line, of course, is now taking on different meaning, given the current context. But he shifted political allegiance, it seems, in that time to then start donating to long-shot presidential candidates like Tulsi Gabbard, who, ironically, is now helping Donald Trump with that debate prep over the last couple of weeks. So it's a bit of a mixed profile that we're getting from of this guy. He's technically unaffiliated to any political party. He's unregistered to either party as of 2012, but we do know that he voted in the Democratic primary this year in North Carolina. So a different profile to what we're used to seeing to these kind of lone wolf attacks, but no doubt it's going to get politicized one way or another.
Katie Gaudini, is it a fool's game to try to draw any conclusions from any of this, or does it say something about the United States?
I think one thing that stood out to me that's very interesting about this individual is that he couldn't afford a lawyer. He said he made less than $3,000 a month. And the only two assets he had in his possession were two used and old vehicles. And I think he's actually really emblematic of a whole group of people in the United States as well, who are struggling financially, who have experienced increasing inequality and feel quite desperate, and perhaps don't feel that either candidate is looking out for their needs. So I think from that, we can extrapolate and we can look towards the way that inequality is also playing into this election. And it's bringing people really to a brink of violence in some cases.
Craig Capitis?
I think in the understandable journalistic scramble for data on the shooter, we're really burying the lead. Which is how Trump leverages, how Trump angles these various characters into his fictional story. And, you know, martyrdom is arguably the most powerful force in politics anywhere in the world. And Trump is now using this guy as a cudgel to convince the public that he's a martyr. Look what what you started out with. And this goes into this fictional storytelling that he's been selling to the American people. Now, there's a lot of folks who aren't buying it. He's certainly not winning any new votes for this, but he's obviously ginning up his base to go out there and create mischief. And I think that's the most interesting story. He uses characters, whether it's Musk, the MyPillow guy, Rudy Giuliani. One other thing here, let's not forget, quite a few presidents have been the victims of assassination attempts. Roosevelt, Truman, Ford, obviously Kennedy.
Reagan.
And what other president has leveraged assassination attempts into some larger fictional storyline? Not one of them. This is a grift. This is part of Trump's gimmick. It's his hustle. It's part of his merchandising. What was it that Frazier said? Trump is coming out with a new line of digital currency. I mean, it's a hustle. It's a hustle. And people buy into it.
Do people buy into it, Chris Jackson?
Things the Trump campaign did after this attempt was send out a fundraising solicitation. Indeed, the one that you showed on the screen was actually a fundraising solicitation if you read at the bottom. So yes, they are seeking to use it to further their campaign goals. And I do agree that Donald Trump does have a special, depending on how you look at it, gift at building a narrative for the American public, a narrative that's oftentimes based in fantasy, but it is a compelling story, especially if you're someone who gets your news from conservative media or social media, where that's all you hear 24 hours a day.
I would agree with that. But what you've also seen in America, and I've seen this up close and too personal for my taste, is a lot of individuals and institutions in the United States are managing to profit, to monetize Trump's insanity, Trump's scam. They buy into Trump because they can make money from it. Fox News is a great example of this. The Murdochs are currently fighting in the state of Nevada over who's going to own all of Fox's assets when Rupert Murdoch dies. And the fight is between children who want to keep it conservative and those who don't, because there's money in this wackadoodle conservative cause. Now, I will leave it to Katie to explain the psychology.
Hang on, you say conservative cause, you say conservative cause, but CNN gets good ratings when they talk about Trump.
They all participate in this, and this goes back to I really have this criticism about many, not our colleagues, but many of the people in the legacy media. You don't send in Meet the Press to cover World Wrestling Entertainment. They're covering this as the Trump campaign, as if it was a real political campaign. And it's not. It is not. So you can send in all the big guns in Washington that you want to ask Trump questions. They know what the answer is going to be. He's selling this storyline, and merchandise is attached to it. Now, I don't know how you untangle that knot, how the media untangles that knot. We haven't been able to do it for, what, close to 10 years now. But, I think we have spent way too much time with Trump trying to figure out why, which is a question for the psychiatrists. I'm more interested in how he's done it, which I find fascinating. Or is the American public, or such a giant wad of it, really this gullible? I don't know, Katie, you tell me. I don't know what the answer is. Are they this gullible? I haven't lived there for many years. That can be the only logical answer to this problem.
Katie Gaudini?
Well, I do live there normally, and I think this is a real chicken and egg debate that Craig's highlighting, which is, has Trump created this story and people are buying into it and they're gullible and there we have the problem? Or did people already believe this and Trump tapped into that and is going with the story? So there's difference of opinion on what started first. Was there already a feeling of martyrdom amongst a population in the country, and Trump was very savvy in tapping into that? Or did he create that story and that illusion that people have then adopted? That's a different debate, a different conversation, and I'm not convinced that it started with Trump.
But it was a debate from 2016. Is it any different, Katie, in 2024? Has this conversation moved along?
It's gone further to the right, I'll tell you that much. It's become more violent. I mean, I have colleagues that are studying people on the right throughout the United States. They're on the ground researchers, and they're telling me that they're scared for this election. They think there is going to be a violent outbreak either way. They're talking to everyday Americans who are stockpiling guns. And I don't want to be fear-mongering here, but my eyes have been opened through doing my research to the fact that there are the stakes are much higher now. People are much angrier. And this election, the temperature's been turned way, way up.
There have been these concerns over whether how tense it will be in 2020. It took days and in certain states weeks to find out who had won the Electoral College in that particular state. And of course, there was the January 6th attacks. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an advocacy group, keeps statistics on hate and violent groups. It identified 52 active militia groups throughout the United States in 2023. It's a decline, though, from 61 a year previous. And the Southern Poverty Law Center says the decrease stems from the continued fallout from the January 6th insurrection. However, Fraser Jackson, as you go out on the campaign trail, bear in mind that the same report says that what had been sort of national militias and the such have perhaps become more decentralized since. Do you have a feeling that it's violent out there when you're on the campaign trail?
It's difficult to say because I think, it depends. It varies. America's such a big place, right, that it varies so differently where you are state to state. It's almost, it's the size of Europe. It's like flying over multiple different countries all within the same country. So there's a lot of diversity in that sense, there's a lot of variety. I will say America does still feel extremely polarized. And the statistics show that in some ways it's getting more and more polarized. But from my own personal experience, the people that I'm talking to now, I think Trump's base is always going to be Trump's base. They are always going to love him. No matter what happens, they're always going to be there. I think what the Democrats are trying to do and what most political analysts say they need to do is fight on the margins, because what you're actually arguing over here is that these people are already in their camps, and it's the people in the middle that really is where this battle, for whichever way you look at it, is going to be won or lost. It is those undecideds that tend to lean more right, tend to lean more Republican. You're effectively fighting for the disaffected Republican voter who might be more of a Ronald Reagan Republican as opposed to a Donald Trump Republican, who were tired of this rhetoric. And I think in some ways, the way that Kamala Harris is going about her campaign is the perfect way to win those people over. She's trying to bring more policy issues to the table. That is something which polls better with this group of people. And if you look at the way she's dealing with Donald Trump before this assassination attempt, at least, there was that interview with CNN where Dana Bash read back what Donald Trump had said about her ethnicity and asked for her reaction. And she said, same old tired playbook, next question. I think that plays very well to that section of people who have effectively had enough of Donald Trump's rhetoric, his amped up rhetoric. And, you know, it is a show. It is a spectacle. Donald Trump is a master of that. He is an entertainer at his core. He is somebody who loves audiences. He knows what to do to grab the national spotlight. And honestly, he was floundering in the weeks before. I have a source inside the campaign who said that really he was a bit lost when he saw how many of the national headlines were going Kamala Harris's way. And that really, she was taking up all the political oxygen and he was floundering. And I think we saw that in the lead up to the debate and then in his debate performance as well. He peddles certain falsehoods that he knows will get national headlines. Look at that thing about the Haitian migrants eating the dogs and the cats and the pets. He knows at his core that is not true. I think he knows that is not true, but he will say what he has to say to get the headlines. And, you know, we had a bit of a window into that when J.D. Vance said, if I have to make up stories to get the attention of the American media, then that's what I'll do. I will say, as Craig said earlier, I don't agree that this assassination attempt was staged. I think that is a bridge too far. But, you know, various other things, such as the Haitian migrant crisis, have been blown out of proportion to give him the headlines that he so desperately wants. Because ultimately, he's one of those old school entertainers at his core that believes that there's no such thing as bad press. And he would rather be in the headlines for the wrong reasons than not be in the headlines at all.
Yeah, the old Oscar Wilde line, better to be talked about than not be talked about. Before Sunday's incident, the news cycle was still on Trump's substantiated warning during that debate with Kamala Harris last week of immigrants stealing and eating house pets. Craig Capitis referenced the marquee Sunday morning interview show, Meet the Press, his running mate, showing a big dose of fire and brimstone on Meet the Press.
I trust my constituents more than I do the American media that has shown no interest in what's happened in Springfield until we started sharing cat memes on the internet, which is disgraceful that the American media ignored this town. And that's the most important part.
And as Fraser was saying, Vance went further on CNN the same morning, claiming, quote, the American media totally ignored this stuff until Donald Trump and I started talking about cat memes. If I have to create stories that the American media actually pays attention to the suffering of the American people, then that's what I'm going to do.
That's virtually the same words are inscribed in stone in the entrance to the World Wrestling Entertainment Wrestling Museum in the United States. That is what's going on here.
But they're smart people. If they're doing it, it's because it might be a winning formula.
Yeah, it might be a winning formula, but the problem is, what if he doesn't win? That's the issue. Because if Trump loses this election, he's not going to go quietly into the night. This thing is going to be fought. He's going to do a full tilt boogie Roy Cohn on this. They're going to take it to the Supreme Court. They already have the lawyers lined up. As Fraser can tell you, the Republican Party is already doing the trying to cut stop people from voting in various states by enacting new laws. There's this disbelief that this is going to end, you know, the day after Election Day. It's not. This is going to go on, and it's going to get ugly, and it's going to get violent. And I have heard this from, I would say, virtually everyone I've spoken to in the states who's around Trump and also around the Harris-Waltz campaign. They are bracing for something ugly because Trump will keep it going.
So you heard Chris Jackson Fraser saying how there's a segment of the population that's exhausted by all the drama. So what does your crystal ball tell you? Does that mean it will be a resounding win for one camp, or are we headed for the scenario that Craig is mentioning?
Right now, it looks like it's a toss-up. It looks very close, particularly in the swing states that are going to decide the election and our peculiar electoral college system. But there is a lot of potential vote on the sidelines that could be mobilized either way. I think one of the characteristics of this election cycle, with all of the twists and turns we've had, is that there is a wide range of potential outcomes, everything from a huge Trump and Republican victory on one side to a huge Harris and Democratic victory on the other side. And it is going to come down to who decides to show up on election day. Is it that aggrieved base that has been mentioned, or is it that larger group of people who are sort of tired of everything and are looking to turn the page?
Just if you could, Chris, we have that map that was appearing on the screen there. And this was a map that we compiled last week. It's not budged much in the meantime. The bits in yellow are the ones that are actual toss-ups as opposed to leaning one way or the other. Let me ask you, Chris Jackson, you're saying how most people have made up their minds. Does that mean that it will still be a tight race in November, or could there be what is called in political parlance an October surprise that gets voters to change their minds?
Well, given how this campaign has worked to date, I would not bet against yet more surprises in the 6 or so weeks we have to go before the election day. But I think it's important to remember, as was already noted, America's a big country, and 1% of the American population is over 3 million people. So even a 1 percentage point swing could potentially represent a large number of votes. And remember, in 2020, these states came down to only a few tens of thousands of votes difference between Biden and Trump. So that's the margin we're talking about. And, you know, going from a small win could be the matter of a few thousand people voting one way or the other.
Katie Gaudini, you were mentioning earlier in our conversation, people who genuinely feel aggrieved, who genuinely feel as though they're being ignored by politicians. Is it down to sort of a clash of civilizations, if you will, between red and blue states, or is there a common ground left?
I mean, the hopeful answer is there's always a common ground left. I do think, I don't know what's going to happen in this election, but as Craig mentioned, Trump isn't going away. And I would add to that, it's not just about Trump isn't going away, it's what he's birthed isn't going away, right? So there's other candidates out there, other people who will run for office in the future who carry Trump ideas and Trump style of politics, and they're not going anywhere, even if Harris wins in November.
Even if Harris wins in November, and that Harris's strategy, your thoughts on it, will she enthuse people to go vote? Because that's, even if she's looking for people who are moderate, she needs them to be enthusiastic enough to go cast a ballot.
I do think so. You know, I spoke to a lifelong diehard Republican this week, and he had switched his vote. He's voting for Harris now, enthusiastically voting for Harris. Why? Because he's sick of the drama that Trump brings. He's sick of the division, the rhetoric that Trump jumps style of politics. He can't take it anymore. So this lifelong Republican is switching to a vote for Harris. I mean, that's huge. And if there are more people like him in the country, then she'll win.
Craig Capitis, Trump, you were telling us earlier, is good for the business model of media companies. But is he good for business?
He's good for business because he promises to lower taxes. And there's a very big slice of the millionaire, billionaire class in the United States who will always vote for someone who will lower taxes. I spent years writing about that very group of people years ago when I was at the Wall Street Journal. They don't care about anything else other than lowering tax rates. Full stop.
But those aren't the people who are going to make the difference. There aren't enough of those millionaires and billionaires to swing the state of Georgia
or the swing of Arizona. You're absolutely right, Francois, but they got the money to keep the troops out. And that's what they're doing. They're bankrolling this insanity, knowing full well it's insane. If we had more time tonight, I could give you anecdote after anecdote of the characters who have been supporting Trump, who should know better, just because they're going to get a bigger refund. They're not going to have to pay as much in capital gains tax. There's nothing wrong with American capitalism. It's about the money and power and greed that's really taking it over. And that, you know, pay a few more bucks if you got $50 billion. But when you're in that group of people, it's been my experience of writing about them. You mentioned my book, Mona Lisa's Pajamas, where a lot of these characters are in there. They don't look at it that way. They want to save every goddamn nickel they possibly can. And Trump has proven that he can do that for them. And these people have bankrolled what you're seeing in the streets. They're bankrolling the voter suppression. And let's not forget, there's a hell of a lot more guns in the United States than there are voters. And people are already starting to shoot them.
Fraser Jackson, final point on this. We mentioned at the outset the suspect already facing gun violation charges. That's been a lot of the conversation on this side of the Atlantic. How come he had this assault rifle and was able to wander around for 11 hours around Donald Trump's golf course with it? Of course, the conversation about guns, that's not on anyone's radar where you are. Or is it?
At the moment, the conversation has not gotten that far, but inevitably it will get there. But, you know, I think there's a kind of sense of pessimism as to will anything ever change. I speak to my friends, my American friends, about this quite a lot. Obviously, this is one of the main stark differences between life as a European and life as an American. And the experience you have is, you know, how readily available and widely distributed guns are, even in places, you know, where they technically are illegal or harder to get, at least. You know, these things bleed into society at all levels. So I speak to my friends quite a lot about this. And a lot of them say to me that they are themselves are, you know, kind of not very, they're kind of reluctant to believe that anything can really change, especially if you had something like Sandy Hook, for example, where, you know, scores of toddlers were shot in their own school. If the law isn't going to change after something as devastating as that, they basically don't believe that it ever will change. And it's quite a sad point, you know, when you talk to people about this. It is one of the most marked differences between growing up as a kid in the UK and growing up as a kid in the US. You know, you'd never have to do active shooter drills in the UK because it's not part of our lived reality. I think at some point, America has to come to terms with the fact that they are the only Western power that has this problem. It is a uniquely American problem, and we'll see whether this changes anything. But, you know, a lot of our people here that I'm speaking to are hesitant to believe that anything will change.
Okay, here's Donald Trump's response to what Fraser just said. Hey, you got that problem with knives there. They're knifing people everywhere. Birmingham, Manchester, at your football games. It's bloody knives, knives, knives. You don't need guns. People walking around with machetes in England. I read The Sun. That's how you play the game with Trump.
The difference is
that's how you play the game.
The difference is a knife doesn't kill 20 people in the space of 30 seconds. That's the difference. You know, a knife is a much more personal attack. The number of victims from a knife attack are normally a lot lower than they are during a gun attack. And I think there needs to be a bit of rationality brought into this. But the problem
Trump
is when guns
are
so literally ingrained into the Constitution, that is the problem.
And you're priming the pump for another conversation. I wish we had more time. Fraser Jackson in Washington, Chris Jackson in Washington, Katie Gaddini in Lucca, Italy, Craig Capitis, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.